Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Phil Dierking, and Anne Ball. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will bring us America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
China will again lay claim to operating the fastest bullet train service in the world. According to Chinese media, the Beijing to Shanghai train will once again be allowed to reach speeds up to 350 kilometers an hour. A deadly crash between two bullet trains in 2011 caused China to limit the speeds to 300 kilometers an hour. The South China Morning Post reported the change will cut travel time by 1 hour on the 1,300-kilometer trip between Beijing and Shanghai. The faster Beijing-Shanghai trains will begin September 21st, and additional lines will also be launched, according to the newspaper. China already has several of the world's fastest operating trains. The fastest is a non-bullet train, the Shanghai Maglev, that can reach speeds up to 430 kilometers an hour. The train is limited to carrying passengers from Shanghai's center to the city's airport. The term Maglev stands for magnetic levitation. In this system, train vehicles are kept off the ground and powered by magnets. High-speed bullet trains have wheels and run on a track. The second fastest train in the world is the one running between Beijing and Shanghai, according to the website Railway Technology. China also has more high-speed rail lines than anywhere else in the world, covering about 19,000 total kilometers, according to the Associated Press. The fastest non-operating train in the world, undergoing testing in Japan, has reached a top speed of 603 kilometers per hour. It is a Japan Railway Maglev train. In Europe, Germany, Italy, and Spain all have trains that can travel more than 320 kilometers an hour. In the United States, the Amtrak Ocala Express, which connects several eastern cities, is the country's fastest train. It can travel at a top speed of 241 kilometers an hour. Last year, Amtrak received a $2.45 billion loan from the U.S. government to help develop new high-speed trains expected to launch in 2021. Amtrak says those trains are designed to travel up to 300 kilometers an hour, but will begin service at about 260 kilometers an hour. U.S. company Hyperloop One is continuing to test its own high-speed transport system. Hyperloop is being developed by businessman Elon Musk. He created and owns the aerospace company SpaceX, as well as electric car maker Tesla. Hyperloop operates in a similar way to maglev trains, but uses vehicles called pods. An electromagnetic force causes the pods to float on air inside a series of steel tubes. The system forces air out of the tubes to reduce pressure and lower the resistance for the vehicles. Musk recently announced a Hyperloop pod had reached a top speed of 355 kilometers an hour during a new test. This beat the previous record of 324 kilometers an hour reached by a student team from Germany during a Hyperloop competition in California. Musk has said he plans to keep developing the Hyperloop system, which he hopes will eventually greatly reduce travel times between major U.S. cities. He previously said Hyperloop would be designed to reach a top speed of about 1,200 kilometers an hour. To most experts, that goal seems out of reach in the near future. However, a Chinese aerospace company just announced plans to build a super high-speed train that it says could reach a speed of 4,000 kilometers an hour. An official at China Aerospace Science and Industry Corporation recently spoke about the project during a conference in China, the state-run China News Service reported. The official said the planned train would use maglev technology combined with a Hyperloop-style tube system. He said a project team is currently working with dozens of researchers and companies to develop the world's first high-speed flying train. I'm Brian Lynn.
In August, the United States began renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement with Canada and Mexico. As a candidate for president, Donald Trump called for talks on reworking the 1994 agreement known as NAFTA. One result of NAFTA was an increase in agricultural exports from the United States. So American farmers are worried that any changes to the trade deal could hurt them financially. Ken Beck is a farmer in the state of Illinois. He says it is not easy to grow crops now.
Risky at best. There is no money in this game anymore.
Beck says his farm has been losing money in each of the past 4 years. He says corn and soy prices have dropped, while costs for fertilizer and seed are rising. He believes that the U.S. government can help him and other farmers by increasing trade. His hopes for increased demand and higher crop prices ended when the Trump administration decided to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP agreement. This is why Beck is closely watching the U.S. efforts to renegotiate NAFTA.
For corn producer, grain producer, NAFTA has been extremely good.
The United States is one of the top suppliers of agricultural products to Mexico. The U.S. exported more than $2.5 billion in corn to its southern neighbor in 2016. But this year, there has been a decrease in Mexican imports of U.S. corn and soybean. Beck says that is because Mexico is buying crops from other countries.
Mexico, for the first time in history, bought corn from Argentina. Now, was it cheaper? No, but they're sending a signal.
other signs that worry Beck are coming from President Trump, including his threat to withdraw from NAFTA. Beck says this creates uncertainty for American farmers. Tamara Nelson works for the Illinois Farm Bureau, a nonprofit group working for the state's farmers.
So if you have a shock, like pulling out of TPP or not keeping the agreement going on NAFTA, it makes the markets nervous and it lowers the farmers' farm income.
Nelson says many farmers are worried.
We hope that some of the rhetoric that's sort of anti-trade, anti-exports for agriculture will turn around and that we'll actually have some achievements.
Farmer Ken Beck says he hopes only small changes will be made to NAFTA. And he says he hopes that whatever changes are made take place soon.
Decisions right in the next few weeks are going to have to be made for next year already.
I'm Phil Dierking.
Living things cannot survive without water. Yet, more than 700 million people worldwide have trouble getting clean, safe water. That number comes from the Water Project, a nonprofit group. It estimates that 1 in 9 people do not have access to safe and clean drinking water. Governments, non-governmental organizations, and charities sent representatives to Stockholm, Sweden, earlier this month for World Water Week activities. The subject for this year's Water Week campaign was Water and Waste, Reduce and Reuse. The United States Geological Survey defines wastewater as used water. It is the water that comes out of pipes from people's homes, from their bathrooms, washing machines, and dishwashers. It can contain substances such as human waste, food pieces, oils, and chemicals. Businesses and industries also use water that must be cleaned. Wastewater can also have harmful substances that wash off roads, areas where motor vehicles are kept, and tops of buildings when it rains. Todd Gartner of the World Resources Institute spoke with VOA from Stockholm by Skype. He says only a small amount of wastewater is being reused for other purposes.
Something like, I think it's only 4 or 5% of wastewater is being recycled for any useful purpose. And over 90% of wastewater is just raw water, right? You obviously have some nutrients and metals and other things that you need to filter out, but the technology is increasingly becoming available to treat and reuse that wastewater.
Gartner says the simple step, reusing water, could make a big difference. He notes that recycling is already happening in some places.
Even for potable water. And there's a lot of places where they're treating the water to drinkable standards. And if you think about that as an option, it dramatically reduces our need to rely on fresh water each time.
Treating wastewater is good for human beings because it provides fresh water for us. But it also helps the environment by keeping waste out of rivers and oceans.
80% of wastewater across the world is not treated at all, which means that it's running into oceans and bays.
Another problem is that people are using more clean water than our planet has. Sarah Freakins, a professor at the University of Southern California, spoke with VOA by Skype. She says agriculture is reducing the amount of water in the ground.
It's well known that the groundwater table level is dropping because of all the water that's been used for agriculture. And that means that actually we can't keep doing what we're doing for a very long time. We have to actually change what we're doing.
Todd Gartner believes there are two kinds of solutions. One is low technology, like reforestation or planting trees and fixing pipes that leak. More high-tech solutions include better watering methods for agriculture and factories to remove salt from salt water. On average, the world uses about 10 billion tons of water a day. And while 75% of our planet is covered with water, only about 2% is fresh water that comes from rivers, lakes, ice, and snow. The rest, 98% of the water, is in seas and oceans. It is too salty to drink. This is where desalination businesses come in. The International Desalination Association, an industry group, says there are more than 19,000 desalination plants worldwide. They process more than 92 million tons of water every day. But they require a lot of energy. Currently, desalination operations are found mostly in coastal nations with large energy supplies. Examples are found in the Middle East. Researchers are working to create a less costly technology. They are studying a process called membrane desalination. It moves water through special membranes that keep the larger salt molecules from passing through. Nikolai Vuchkov is president of Water Globe Consultants. He says other technologies, such as using membranes with enzymes and nanoparticles, may cut the cost of using desalination for large amounts of water. He spoke to VOA by Skype.
This type of structure, if we could imagine that we could generate that structure that looks like a honeycomb, we would increase production about 20 times to what we have today.
Scientists say finding a less costly desalination process would mean less pressure on natural sources of clean water. And Todd Gartner says everyone should have access to clean water.
You know, water is a human right, and so we want to make sure that everyone has access to clean, timely, and plentiful water. Right now, we are not allocating it in a way that would suggest it is a human right, and that everybody deserves their equal share.
But for now, the world still faces each day with not having enough water for everyone. I'm Ann Ball.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Warren Harding. He was the 29th president of the United States. Harding was very different from the 28th president, Woodrow Wilson. Wilson supported change. Harding promised a return to normalcy.
Wilson took steps to protect American workers. Harding often worked to protect business owners. Wilson was slow in supporting voting rights for women and in accepting African American people as equal to whites. Harding supported women's suffrage and civil rights for African Americans. Yet both men were popular during their years in office. Today, however, historians usually think of Wilson as one of America's best presidents. But Harding is remembered as one of the worst. Warren Harding was the eighth president from the state of Ohio. His parents were both doctors. Harding spoke about having a happy childhood, growing up on a farm with his brothers and sisters. Some of his favorite early activities were performing in a band. Later, Harding, along with two friends, bought a newspaper. It became successful for several reasons. Harding was kind to his employees and shared the company's profits with them. He also tried not to publish stories that criticized politicians or politics from any party. Finally, he married a woman who had an excellent head for business. Florence Kling Harding led the newspaper's circulation department. She also helped to direct her husband's political career. In time, Warren Harding became a state senator, a lieutenant governor of Ohio, and then a member of the U.S. Senate. He especially liked being a senator, and many of the other lawmakers liked him. One reason is because Harding rarely took a controversial position on any issue. Instead, he accepted most of the ideas of the Republican Party. He was also good-looking and had an excellent speaking voice. These qualities helped earn him the Republican presidential nomination in 1920. A few months later, he easily won the national election. President Harding took office shortly after World War I ended. He promised to make Americans feel calm again and also improve the nation's prosperity. Two of Harding's goals were to support business and to limit immigration. He succeeded on both issues. His administration reduced taxes for big businesses and wealthy people. It also increased tariffs, taxes on foreign imports. And the Harding administration put in place new rules on immigration. The rules made it easier for immigrants from Northern Europe to enter the country, but harder for immigrants from Russia, Eastern, and Central Europe. Harding also took steps to improve the effectiveness of the federal government. But his administration is remembered mostly for its problems. At the beginning of his term, Harding reportedly told friends that the job of being president was too much for him. He appeared to want to do well, and he worked hard, but he turned over most of the responsibility to his friends in the cabinet. A few were very able, but some were dishonest. They abused their positions to gain wealth for themselves and their families. One of the most famous examples of corruption during Harding's administration is known as the Teapot Dome Scandal. The name Teapot Dome comes from a rock in the state of Wyoming. The rock looked like a teapot. Scientists correctly believed that oil could be found in the ground underneath it. At the time, the U.S. Navy depended on oil to fuel its ships. So the federal government claimed the land in case the Navy needed to use the oil in an emergency. But a cabinet official who was a friend of Harding took control of the land. He gave a private company permission to search for oil on it in exchange for a large amount of money. Some lawmakers became suspicious, so they opened an investigation. In time, lawyers proved the act of corruption. Harding's friend was the first person to be found guilty of a crime while serving as a cabinet official. But President Harding did not live to see his friend go to jail. The investigation was just beginning when Harding took a trip to the West Coast to campaign for his policies. Some say that Harding was also trying to escape the problems in his administration. He reportedly told one reporter that worrying about what his friends were doing kept him awake at nights. During the trip, Harding showed signs of not being in good health. Doctors thought he could have food poisoning or pneumonia. He was taken to a hotel in San Francisco, California. For a day, he appeared to be feeling better. He was sitting up in bed, and then suddenly his body shook and collapsed. He died instantly. Reports at the time differed on the cause of Harding's death. Some even said that his wife poisoned the president to protect him from being punished for the wrongdoing in his administration. But most historians think that he had long suffered from heart failure and was struck by a heart attack. He was 57. Millions of Americans mourned over Warren Harding's death. They stood beside railroad tracks as his body traveled from California back to Washington, D.C. The following year, Florence Harding also died. She and her husband are buried together under a grand memorial in their hometown in Ohio. But in the years after his death, Harding's public image worsened. More corruption scandals in his administration came to light, and some historians have criticized him for not having a clear idea about how he wanted to lead the country. In 1927, a woman published a book saying she had a long but secret relationship with Harding, both before and during his presidency. She also said he was the father of her daughter. Genetic testing has confirmed her claim. More than 30 years after her book was published, a lawyer discovered love letters from Harding to a different woman. They confirmed that he had a long romantic affair with the wife of one of his friends. Harding had also been married at the time. These reports, as well as the corruption during his administration, damaged Harding's public image. But he also seemed to know that he would not be remembered as one of the best occupants of the White House. Instead, he tried to be likable and modest. He called himself a man of limited talents who was not fit for the office of president. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.